Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
Can we make it a deal that we're always going to have a yacht rock portion of bumper music? That would make me very happy.
I've been working on a playlist. So you told me originally when this launched that you wanted to go, you know, I forget the exact, I got it written down somewhere, but there was a radio, XM radio.
The Garth channel.
Yeah, the Garth Brooks channel.
I'm just looking for that right mix of country that is current and older, but also some classic rock, you know, because people aren't easily pigeonholed. They have wide ranging musical tastes.
Yes. Yes. And I completely identify with that category as well. Like I like music of all genres, but I was like, wait, I thought Pat liked more yacht rock. So now I'm going to try to slowly weave that into the Garth Brooks channel and some of the classic rock that we got from some of the other programming that we do here with Civic Media.
Like I said, and it goes back to working as a radio DJ, you know, way back in the day. But and I worked at country stations and classic rock stations. And I like when genres, you know, sometimes kind of meld, like a crossover event, like Scooby-Doo and Gilligan's Island or something like that. One of my favorite CDs that I still like to play these days is a compilation called Rhythm, Country, and Blues. And it's country stars and R&B stars coming together on songs. So you've got something like Vince Gill and Gladys Knight singing Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing. You have Patti LaBelle and Travis Tritt belting out When Something Is Wrong With My Baby. Clint Black and the Pointer Sisters doing Chain of Fools. I really do love B.B. King and George Jones doing Patches. And boy, there is just something about when Rainy Night in Georgia is done with Sam Moore and Conway Twitty. I don't have a very deep Conway Twitty playlist, but that would be it. So, you know, those kinds of things, I like to be surprised. And usually by the classics, because I don't know that I've listened to a new song since, I don't know, 2005, maybe. It's a sad confession I'm about to make here, but there's a 60s channel on XM, a 70s channel, an 80s channel, a 90s channel. There's a channel called Pop 2K, and I start to get a little sketchy in there. There's occasionally some where I'll go, I don't remember that one. And now their most recent one is called The 10 Spot, and it's just songs since 2010. And I'd love to tell you that it's 4 out of 5 songs that I don't recognize, but I'd be lying. It's at least 9 out of 10 songs that were popular on the radio, but somebody had the Yacht Rock channel on during all that time instead, or the Garth channel, or the Sinatra channel, or the you know, the Jimmy Buffett channel. So the 10 spot, you know, you kind of lost me, but I'm probably not their target demographic anyway.
No, I think that one gets played in our vehicles, though. So I do hear the 10 spot every now and then.
So as long as I'm skewing older here, let me get into hearing aids. Because this just crossed the wire from President Biden tweeted that for millions of people, hearing aids and doctor's visits are getting too expensive. And that's, he says, why I called on the FDA to make hearing aids available over the counter. Today, they did just that. This action will increase competition and lower the price of a pair by nearly $3,000. And that caught my attention. Lower the price of hearing aids by $3,000.
Wow.
That
is a lot of money for hearing aids.
So I went to see what we've got here, and the New York Times article says the Food and Drug Administration moved on Tuesday to make hearing aids available over the counter and without a prescription to adults, a long-sought wish of consumers frustrated by expensive exams and devices. As soon as mid-October, people with mild to moderate hearing loss should be able to buy hearing aids online and in retail stores without being required to see a doctor for an exam to get a prescription. Somewhat reminds me of how Warby Parker has really caught on with eyeglasses, that, you know, it used to, everything used to be done at the eye doctor's place, and you had to choose frames at your eye doctor's office. And, you know, we've opened up that form of competition. The FDA estimates about 30 million Americans experience hearing loss, but only about one-fifth get help. And in part, that is because of how expensive hearing aids are. I know that in the case of my parents, you know, they each had to get hearing aids and talked about the expense, but, you know, also had some of it covered by insurance. But believe it or not, they both actually liked my solution better for hearing aids, because they both said even with hearing aids, they were still having a tough time hearing the TV. I hold up for Luke and for everybody here a wireless speaker. You know, just a you know, just a, I use this all around the house to listen to music, you know, on my phone or podcasts or whatever. I bought a wireless speaker for each parent. You know, they'd been divorced for almost 50 years. Each one thought it was the greatest thing ever, that I could route TV sound through the wireless speaker. They would blast the volume, of course, but at least they could finally hear the TV. So I appreciate what President Biden and the FDA are doing, but elect me president and I'll make sure everybody has one of these Wi-Fi speakers and you'll be able to hear anything no matter when you want. We're going to talk about what the NBA is doing to try to promote democracy right after this. You're up north. Yeah, I'm glad I gave you an entire treasure trove of music to tap into here so that it's not entirely yacht rock, Luke. Don't want to get too predictable for you. Just moderately predictable will do.
There you go. Yeah, just a little predictability. That's all you need. We're creatures of habit. It's okay.
It's Tuesday morning across Wisconsin. A very nice day in many spots, but there will be passing clouds and the chance of a shower or thunder shower in the area for the next couple of days, especially further to the north. Good chance of precipitation at some point during the weekend as well. Seasonable temperatures, as we learned today, not seasonal temperatures, seasonable temperatures for this time of year. Which I guess is okay. I wouldn't mind a few more, you know, days pushing 90, but, you know, we'll probably get those in October because, you know, you talk about predictability, our climate, nothing. There's nothing to predict there anymore. The NBA schedule for this year is not out yet. It will come out tomorrow, but we have learned something about one part of the schedule for the National Basketball Association. There will be no games on Election Day or Election Night. The league will make sure that all 30 teams are playing on November 7th, the night before the midterm elections. And then the NBA is going to use that night as an opportunity to encourage fans to get out the vote and amplify the need for civic engagement. I talked before about how some groups like Citizen Action and others, I refer to them as democracy's little helper. This is a big help. This is one of the big guns coming out and saying, hey, we're going to help people understand the importance of voting. So there will be no games there. The league said this morning that the scheduling decision came out of the NBA family's focus on promoting nonpartisan civic engagement and encouraging fans to make a plan to vote during the midterm elections. The AP article here rightly notes that all 435 seats in the U.S. House of Representatives will be up for grab, along with more than 30 U.S. Senate seats and, of course, you know, races for governor. James Cadigan, the executive director for the NBA's Social Justice Coalition, told NBC, which first reported on this, "It's unusual. We don't usually change the schedule for an external event, but voting and Election Day are obviously unique and incredibly important to our democracy. For that, you can thank in large part your Milwaukee Bucks. because of something that they did back in 2020. This was, you know, after the George Floyd murder by Minneapolis police, and in the unrest that resulted, there were games that were halted and boycotts that were made, starting with the Milwaukee Bucks deciding not to play a preseason game when they were in the the Disney World bubble at the time. It was not just that. It was also the Jacob Blake shooting in Kenosha. And there was just such a frustration on the part of Milwaukee Bucks players who wanted to make a statement that more needed to be done about police violence against Black men, women, and children. It led other sports teams, other sports leagues to delay games, to postpone games for a time. And it led to more of a commitment, you know, you kind of call it a social justice commitment, you can, but again, more civic participation commitment that athletes, sports teams, sports leagues have voices, and they shouldn't hesitate to use it. It is really it's taking that whole mindset of, you know, shut up and sing, shut up and play, and punching it right in the teeth, which is frankly what it needs. Because these folks, these NBA players, coaches, league owners, you know, they're not puppets out here for our entertainment. You know, they are allowed to have a voice, and they are allowed to try to do what they can to make life a little easier for themselves and for fellow Americans. Well, it would be nice if that was it, if this was all a kumbaya moment. But to help you revisit things a little bit later in 2020, the Milwaukee Bucks were planning to have an early voting event at Fiserv Forum, and it had to be canceled because Republicans threatened to bring a lawsuit. Remember, these are the same Republicans that attacked Democracy in the Park, an event in Madison that, again, helped encourage voting. But Republicans were consistently, on Donald Trump's instructions, against early voting, against mail-in voting. And as a result, early voting events that were planned in October of 2020 for Fiserv Forum and Miller Park no longer took place due to concerns about legal challenges. And so what you had is really a not so veiled threat against, you know, communities of color, you know, of course, because Milwaukee is a majority people of color. 12% of the city's 600,000 residents are Black, 20% are Latino. There was no Republican noise made about an early voting event at Lambeau Field in Green Bay, which is about 70% white. It was a continued targeting of communities where you had voters predominantly voting Democratic. Even in the wake of the 2020 election, if you've ever heard the term Zuckerbucks, that is money that Mark Zuckerberg put into a foundation separate from Facebook called, I believe, the Center for Tech and Civic Life.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
And I mean, it poured funds into communities of all sizes, including many all across Wisconsin, because Republican, by and large, Republican-controlled legislatures and other bodies were starving local governments of the funds they needed for things, not just for education or potholes, but election administration. And so if you want your elections to be safe and secure, you're going to want to make sure that you have good secure equipment, that you have good staffing and such. And a lot of these communities didn't have it. They applied for and received grants from this group. And it wasn't just in Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay, Kenosha, Racine, five of the state's largest cities, but in communities throughout Wisconsin.
More than 200 communities across Wisconsin, and anybody that asked for it received the funds too. So red areas, blue areas, purple areas, anybody that requested, any municipality that requested the funds, received the funds.
Mm-hmm. There was no partisan bent to it. It was, completely in the whole notion of public service to help elections to be safe and secure. And yet, when the election was done, it was this group that was targeted, not for all of the cities that they helped, large and small, but only for the large ones that were singled out. To this day, if you ask a lot of people about, the Center for Tech and Civic Life and its funding, they would tell you, it is their belief that, only these five large cities got funding, when, that simply wasn't the case at all. But it is this ongoing desire to suppress voters and to suppress voting overall in large cities that has led to attacks on its integrity, and that has led to restrictions on voting. We don't have drop boxes in Wisconsin this year, something we've had for years and years and years with no problems whatsoever. I'll say again, no problems whatsoever. But based on a partisan whim and an ideological whim, the right-wing justices on the state Supreme Court have now struck them down, at least for now. Again, what that does is it forces large communities to try to get their larger number of voters to cast ballots with longer lines, with fewer voting places, polling places, because they don't have the budget to staff up. You've seen in other states restrictions that say, every community can only have one drop box. Well, up here in the town of Eagle Point, we only have one drop box, or had. But try having one drop box for just the city of, Madison or Chippewa Falls, for that matter. We are still the only advanced democracy with a major political party working to make it harder to vote rather than easier. We're looking for any opportunity to turn that trend around. And so for the National Basketball Association to look at their upcoming schedule and clear the decks on election day, and even more so, schedule every team to play the day before election day as part of a campaign to get more people to vote, means the NBA is doing more for democracy than an entire political party or the entire ideological end of a spectrum in promoting the ability to vote as you wish, to vote fairly, to vote without intimidation, to vote without suppression. And so, a real tip of the cap to the NBA, which made that announcement this morning. Something else that will be on the ballot in just one county is going to be rather unusual. It will take place in Dunn County, where you'll find Menominee here along the I-94 strip. Dunn County voters are going to get a chance to vote on a referendum asking Congress and the president to nationalize health care. The referendum was approved by the Dunn County Board. These are the kinds of things, you normally would see something like that, say, in Madison, Milwaukee, or any other large urban area. Dunn County is quite the opposite, as written up by Lee Newspapers, and I'm seeing it here in the Journal Times. But in this case, this rural county is going to have this referendum, the result of dozens of locals working together for years, and they say their goal is to let the public decide, not political parties. Let the public decide if the federal government should cover healthcare costs for all, rather than just Medicare for seniors and Medicaid for lower income families and people who are disabled. Just find out what the people have to say, because again, we're one of those, we're the only country that has such a screwed up healthcare system compared to whether it's strictly a single payer plan in some countries or other ways where private insurance is still involved, but nobody goes bankrupt because of healthcare costs. That's again one of those things that will leave you speechless, that we're still the only country where the greatest cause of bankruptcy is that you got sick or got in an accident. But in Dunn County, they're going to vote in November on whether maybe it's time we join the rest of the Western world in how we take care of each other. This is Up North News. We'll take a break. More after this.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Which, let's see. Okay. George Benson, where'd you pull that from? That's awesome.
See, Brian and I do the same thing.
Not nearly enough appreciation for music from 1980, you know. So
there you go. Brian and I, we always get hung up then on the fun musical clips that we'll play for each other to go into the show. And I'm getting that vibe right now. But I got a whole Yacht Rock playlist now as well. I'm going down a little bit of a rabbit hole this morning, finding some new music for the ins and outs.
All right. Well, a challenge accepted. Good work out of you. A little later today, President Joe Biden will sign the Inflation Reduction Act into law, a measure that is going to tamp down inflation, lower prescription drug prices, tackle climate change, reduce the deficit, and impose a minimum tax on some of the largest corporations out there. The White House has put together several fact sheets on what's going to happen in all of the areas: taxes, climate, healthcare. And again, since a lot of news coverage is, you know, really on the surface, you know, and a lot about the horse race and all the Democrats that voted for it and the Republicans who voted against it, I thought some of these numbers, you know, would bring the bill to life as it's signed into law. So let's start with taxes and making the tax code more fair. And they do this all by the numbers. And so I'll start with a number here. 55. 55 is the number of America's largest, wealthiest corporations that got away without paying a cent in federal income tax in 2020. That's 55 major corporations that paid less in taxes than you did. Next would be $160 billion. That's how much the top 1% of earners is estimated to evade each year in taxes. So when they evade $160 billion a year, again, that's money you and I have to make up in tax rates that shouldn't have to be so high. Let's see, what do we have here? Oh, I think most people have heard the $400,000 number. No family making less than $400,000 a year will see their taxes go up. And instead, over 10 years, $124 billion in savings will be generated by collecting taxes already owed by the wealthiest and by the largest corporations. It is to that point that you have ridiculous claims from Tom Tiffany and others that all of that extra support for the Internal Revenue Service is going to be turned into, you know, armed agents who are going to be dropped from black helicopters onto your roof to shake you down, when, you know, statements like that do nothing more than show a willingness to protect tax cheats and tax evaders. And, you know, you are forced to make up the difference. So for the IRS to finally get, you know, the support it needs so that, you know, certain people stop thinking that taxes are for little people is a positive development in the Inflation Reduction Act. From a healthcare standpoint, right now, according to the White House, Americans pay 2 to 3 times what citizens of other countries pay for prescription drugs. Medicare beneficiaries will see their prescription costs go down. 5 to 7 million Medicare beneficiaries will see their prescription drug costs go down because Medicare will be allowed to negotiate for lower prescription drug costs. I told you earlier about how there are things that I was saying when running for Congress 10 years ago that are still being talked about today. One of them is the wage cap for Social Security, how that needs to be raised, if not blown up. That's still being talked about, not happening. But two other things I talked about, you know, are happening. One is the tax on stock buybacks by corporations. And the other, something we've talked about for 10 years now, is letting Medicare negotiate with big pharmaceutical companies to lower prescription drug costs and save taxpayers money. A very common sense provision that big drug companies and Republicans have fought for years and years and years, and that is finally going to go away. That will help some 50 million Americans who have Medicare Part D, because their pharmacy costs are about to be capped at $2,000 per year. The fact that there are seniors paying more than $2,000, you know, seniors on Medicare, is something that, frankly, was not exactly a badge of honor for the United States, and is going to benefit those, along with 3.3 million Medicare beneficiaries with diabetes, who will benefit from a cap on insulin costs, capped at $35 for a month's supply. Wait a minute, you're saying? I thought Ron Johnson and the others voted against an insulin cap. They did. This insulin price cap is, again, only for 3.3 million Medicare beneficiaries. We could have had a price cap for every American on private health insurance who needs insulin to, you know, live. And instead, Ron Johnson, Tom Tiffany, everybody else said, nope, don't need that.
That's one of those fascinating things of how the Senate parliamentarian chooses what does and does not go towards the deficit, because apparently the fact that they allowed that to happen for Medicare recipients and not for anybody on private insurance is kind of wild to me, just because you're going to even hear some instances where there's going to be voters out there that are going to think potentially that they had their insulin prices capped, but they don't necessarily qualify for Medicare because they're on private insurance. And so it also gives one more tangible result of if you send more Democratic candidates to the Senate or to the House and continue to allow them to work with Joe Biden after this cycle, of what could happen, because you need a couple more senators to be able to make that happen for all private insurers, apparently.
Well, especially when you consider, looking again at this data sheet, the pharmaceutical industry has 1,600 lobbyists, three times the number of members of Congress. And all told, this year, the pharmaceutical industry is going to spend $187 million in lobbying. Money that, again, could go to research for new drugs or making prescription drugs more affordable, but instead, lobbying to protect their profit margins. So for 20 years now, Democrats have tried to allow Medicare to negotiate, haven't had the votes until now. Turning to healthcare costs in terms of the Affordable Care Act and the premium, or the policies rather, that you get on the Affordable Care Act marketplace, those premiums were reduced during the early phases of the pandemic to keep health insurance affordable for Americans. Those premiums were set to go up, but the Inflation Reduction Act will keep them in place. And so that premium reduction was saving the average household $800 a year on health insurance premiums. That's 13 million Americans who get their insurance through the Affordable Care Act marketplace that will continue to save $800 a year on their health insurance premiums. Because of that, another 3 million Americans will continue to have health insurance. It was estimated that if the premiums went up, about 3 million Americans would say, that's too high, I have to let it go and not have health care coverage. When the Affordable Care Act was being debated, again, a little over 10 years ago, the shameful statistic was that something like 15 to 20% of Americans didn't have health care coverage. Right now, the rate of Americans without insurance is 8%. That's an all-time low. that's something to build on. You know, again, not zero. It didn't solve everything overnight. But to bring that from between 15 to 20% uninsured down to 8 saves money for all of us. Because again, every time somebody without insurance gets sick, gets in an accident or whatever, gets treated, and then they can't afford and don't pay their hospital bill, hospitals and clinics tend not to eat those costs. They tend to, you know, pass them along. And that's something that we're not going to have to deal with anymore. And I remember right out of college, my first paycheck, I got it and I saw what the health insurance coverage was. And I was going to cancel my health insurance on that Monday and be one of the many who said, I just can't afford health insurance. My appendix burst that weekend and I ended up in the hospital for 2 months, needing 3 surgeries. And I had very minimal out-of-pocket costs simply because my appendix had the good sense to burst, you know, the day before I would have otherwise canceled my health insurance. Sometimes your body saves you from yourself.
Yeah, that's some heck of the timing for that appendix burst because, wow, talk about divine intervention almost, Pat. Like getting rid of your health insurance after or before that would have really not been good.
It's something I still, tease my wife about because mine was not the thing where you get the super sharp pain and you just know something's wrong. It turned out my appendix was like, you know, tucked under a loop of intestine or something. So instead, it just felt like a really bad ache, almost like an upset stomach, but not quite. And so I had spent that Sunday on the couch in pain. Not sure what it was. Was it stomach flu? Was it something? I didn't know what it was, but I was not feeling good. I was feeling feverish. And I'd been married all of a month at that point. And I was getting no sympathy from the person with the courage to marry me because we were supposed to be painting the inside of our first apartment and I was not participating. So she was. And so not only was I dealing with the illness on the inside, I was dealing with the paint fumes as well. And she just thought I was being the typical man baby that I in fact was back at that age when I would get sick. But it turned out to be more than that. I finally drove myself to the hospital a couple of days later and needed to be wheeled right into surgery. She felt a little guilty about that I'd been sitting there lying there with a burst appendix all this time. I was not in fact being a big man baby that time.
That one isolated instance.
I've tried to get better since then, but as you could tell a couple of weeks back when I was holding a cane and, you know, going on and on about a knee that I thought was going to fall off, but it turned out it just needed a cortisone shot. I guess I can still be a baby now and then. Where were we? Oh, the Inflation Reduction Act. We had covered the tax savings, the healthcare savings. One more section left, and that's in clean energy and climate. And this is one where, again, we've talked about what's good for the climate, but let's talk about what's good for families as part of this. Families that take advantage of electric vehicle tax credits and clean energy tax credits could save more than $1,000 a year. There's $14,000 in direct consumer rebates for families who buy heat pumps or other energy efficient home appliances. And then those energy efficient appliances could save families at least $350 a year. About 7 million families will be able to install solar on their roofs with a 30% tax credit. That will save them $300 a year in energy costs and $9,000 over the life of the system. And basically, yeah, does put the country back on track toward meeting a goal of reducing, you know, the amount of carbon we're putting out there and contributing to, a bad climate. We are going to strengthen climate resilience programs. There's going to be the clean energy jobs. There's going to be credits to, you know, farms that engage in better practices. And, you know, that's also going to have a health impact. It's estimated that nearly 4,000 deaths will be prevented and up to 10,000 asthma attacks prevented annually by 2030 by making the air cleaner, by doing the things that are now partially paid for in the Inflation Reduction Act. All of that to be signed later today. We'll take a break, wrap up our visit together for a Tuesday right after this.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 FM and WXCO, 1230 AM.
Here's Pat Kreitlow.
I am reminded by the great Francesca Hong, state assembly rep, who has one of my favorite Twitter feeds, and I really do have to get her booked on the show, but she reminds us that Ron Johnson told Brian Kilmeade recently that he is opposed to Medicare negotiating drug prices because it is, quote, medical industry. Well, we wouldn't want that now, would we? So again, just in case you're wondering, you know, who Ron Johnson might be working for on this. And apparently, I don't have it in front of me, but there is a new attack ad on Mandela Barnes criticizing women of color that he has complimented. I can only assume that that's Ilhan Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I'm just guessing. And if that's really what, you know, Ron Johnson and his supporters are going to do, is try to make this campaign about, you know, women of color from outside of Wisconsin, I think that that's, again, that'll work with a base that's already out there, but I don't know that it gets you any extra votes, because there are plenty of people already motivated to vote who might not normally in a midterm election. The repeal of Roe v. Wade is certainly the top driver among many reasons. And while this is not from Wisconsin, this case that just came down from Florida is not going to help matters at all. A Florida appeals court has just affirmed a court order that prohibits a parentless 16-year-old from getting an abortion on the grounds that she has not proved she is mature enough to get an abortion. So because the 16-year-old has no parents, she can't get her parents' permission. She hasn't proven that she's mature enough to get an abortion, so the state will force her to stay pregnant and to bear a child instead. This is what we have in our court system right now after this many years of Trump-appointed judges and others.
I was gonna say, is this that same Florida judge that was single-handedly responsible for overturning the national mask mandate on airlines? Because what?
Right. It's, I don't know. I like I said, just came down, and here's what you won't see. You won't see that judge or the state of Florida or Governor Ron DeSantis offering to pay for her medical care. They will not, you know, take care of her when she gives birth. They will not provide financial, physical, mental support. You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, freedom, but there's not going to be nearly the pro-life, pro-child sentiment when you force somebody to give birth, whether it's a parentless child or a 10-year-old who's been raped, and you're going to force that child, force that little girl to go through pregnancy. There's a lot at stake that's going to gin up voter turnout. And I think running attack ads against Ilhan Omar may not necessarily be the way to go. Earlier in the show, we talked to Dick Ostman running against Tom Tiffany for Congress. If you missed it earlier, he knows that one of the challenges out there is that while there's all these negative ads that will be run again about scary crime and, you know, scary politicians, Tom Tiffany has actually voted, you know, for or against things. He has an actual record that Dick Ostman will have to call to voters' attention, such as Tiffany voting against a price cap for insulin and Tiffany voting against a bill that would have relieved the baby formula shortage. Also voted, you know, against or has made noise about having Social Security either privatized or come up for, you know, an annual vote by Congress, by politicians. And of course, there was the no vote on burn pit legislation that would have helped veterans with their health, expanding broadband to more of rural Wisconsin, voting against the bipartisan infrastructure bill. These are all things that set up a record, but, you know, getting to each one of those in a campaign ad is extremely difficult because campaign ads, you know, 30 seconds long, and you're really not, you don't have the time to lay out a grocery list of what somebody voted for or against. You have to take one or two things, and then you really have to, you know, drive home that point using whatever, you know, imagery, music, you know, testimonial or whatever, you know, that you have out there. So if you, you know, wonder moving forward, are these the kinds of things that are going to get, you know, mentioned on this program frequently? Yeah, that's really what you're seeing at Up North News as well, is that we can take that extra time that, you know, a local newscast can't do, doesn't have the time to do, or maybe does not have the freedom to do because of whether it's advertiser pressure or the bias of, you know, a publisher, a news director, a station manager, or what have you, that we can take the time to do that. So to that end, it's where we'd really like to have your questions on certain issues or what certain candidates have said or what they've stood for. What's your questions about issues? What are your priorities about what you think the candidates should be talking about? And also, and I'm curious about this, as you start getting political mail, what are you getting? What is the messaging about? Because, you know, we see press releases as they come in, but we don't see, you know, what's in your mailbox. There's probably a good chance you don't want us to see what's in your mailbox. You don't be embarrassed. I mean, somebody still has to subscribe to Cosmo out there, or, you know, whatever.
How did you know that I got my monthly copy this week?
You know, I follow it for the horoscopes. I've always been a big fan. But you do get political mail, and we're curious to see when you get something from a Republican or a Democrat. What is it that they're saying to you? What message are they trying to convey? And is there something there that we need to fact check? And I'm guessing the answer is going to be, you know, yes from time to time, but we would like that. So that's why I hope by now you've reached for a pen or pencil, if you haven't already committed to memory, that our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. We are all the time looking for that kind of feedback that, frankly, we wish more news outlets and I guess elected officials too would get. It's something both of our guests today, Dick Ostman running for Congress and Bob Look running for state Senate, talked about, and that is listening. I mean, yes, I'm going to be talking for 3 hours every morning, sometimes with guests, sometimes with poor Luke, but sitting here talking, but it's all based on what we're hearing from you, what I see in the email box, you know, every day. And it's that's what we want to respond to. It's what we want to book guests on and base our questions around. So thank you for your input for these first couple of weeks. Please keep it coming. I'm Pat Quitelow. We will join you again for another edition of Up North News tomorrow morning.